Joining us now, he's the commissioner of the LPGA, Mike Wan. Mike, welcome back into the golf shop.
Hey, Mark and Mike, how you doing?
We're doing awesome. Seems like there's really nothing going on in the LPGA Tour, no expansion. I mean, there's nothing going on, is there?
Yeah, I've essentially taken the last couple years off.
Well, I mean, this year is going to be a big year, and there's going to be a lot of exciting stuff that happened. But before we do that, in terms of previewing 2017, let's look back a bit at 16 and what you thought were some of the highlights, and maybe get your impressions about the Olympic experience. We're hearing now that the course in Rio is falling into disrepair and blah, all that other stuff that maybe isn't unexpected given the economy down there. Tell us what you thought of 2016 and how it played out for the LPGA.
Well, you know, I've used the term global youth movement for a long time on tour, and I think 2016 was the living example of that. We had, five different players win our majors from five different countries. We went down to the Olympics with 34 different countries represented, and had the neat thing about the Olympics between the men and the women and the six different podium spots, there were people from six different countries. We had winners representing 18 different countries. At our Q school at the end of the year following the Olympics, there was 45 different countries in our qualifying school trying to make it to the LPGA. So, you jump back when I started in 2010, we had our television rights going around to 40 or 50 countries. We had, 10 or 11, 12, 13 different countries teaming up on any weekend. But you jump forward 8 years, 175 countries are watching us every week. We've got players from 35 different countries. You take the top five players in the Rolex World Rankings, they come from five different countries. So, this is truly a global sport where great female golfers are coming from all over the world. It's not just, America, Europe, Korea, but it's literally all over. It's an exciting time. I mean, the Olympics was kind of the grand crescendo probably on the whole season. Standing down there in Rio on the first tee and seeing how it affected our athletes. Probably the coolest part about Rio was sitting in player dining in the morning and listening to players and caddies talk about where they were the night before, because everybody was doing something different. And first time I've ever seen my athletes act like giddy fans. They were so excited to see Usain Bolt, or they had a workout next to, Michael Phelps, or somebody got taped next to, Simone Biles. It was really kind of over the top heady stuff.
Now, what Olympic events besides the golf did you enjoy most?
Actually, when I landed, I drove straight to women's gymnastics, and I didn't really realize, I'd never been to an Olympics before. When I landed, they gave me my credentials, and I didn't know what my credentials were or weren't. And I walked into women's gymnastics, and the woman looked at my credentials. She said, I didn't know what my credentials meant, but they gave me a credential, which must have meant I was like an athlete's parent or an athlete's family. Obviously, I didn't look like an athlete, but so when you walk in, she said, sit in any seat that has a blue back. And I walked down to the forum, and the first two rows of the entire place had a blue back. So I literally sat right behind one of the judges for women's gymnastics as the U.S. team was competing kind of in the all around. And it was the greatest 3 hours I can possibly remember. One, they're incredible athletes. The atmosphere in there was cool. But I walked out of that, and I walked across the street into a basketball game. And from a basketball game, I walked into a table tennis game. You're literally 100 yards away from 15 different venues, and that's what makes the night so special. You can see swimming and walk across the street and see archery, and from there you can walk 100 yards down the street and watch a basketball game. I know no other sports experience like it.
Well, and celebrating, like you say, that global community that's coming together. And, when you came in as commissioner of the LPGA, there was some question about, do we embrace the sort of universality, the globality of our sport, or do we reject it? I mean, there was, everybody's familiar with where the sport was at the time. Did you come in, and was that your platform, was to sort of reject the previous thought that maybe we needed to focus more on the English-speaking audience and get back to being sort of an American, North American, Western European sport? Was that part of your platform in taking over and has been your mission ever since?
It was. I really didn't realize it was controversial until the day I was introduced. I was in Madison Square Garden was when they introduced me as the new commissioner, and we had a pretty significant media throng there. And so in the question and answer session, the first question I got was, Commissioner, what are you going to do about all the international influence on the LPGA Tour? And again, I lived through the last 10 years, and I said, embrace it, two words. And everybody started writing, and I remember thinking, what did I say? And the follow-up question was, do you really think it's going to be good for the sport if players, come from all over and don't speak English? And I said, hey, guys, I mean, I'm not a 40-year commissioner, but I would tell you this. I've watched a lot of other sports between the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, spend literally hundreds of millions of dollars trying to make their sport interesting outside the U.S. I don't know how many more games we have to play in London before the NFL realizes that there isn't a huge market there, or how many, you know, I keep watching now the NBA is going to play games in different markets. But I said, listen, other commissioners in other sports are trying to make their sport global, trying to have a global following. They're trying to become, you know, FIFA or the, you know, Premier League, where they're watching them on TV all over the world. The LPGA is decades ahead. So why wouldn't we try to embrace young girls growing up all over the world coming to play here so we can show female golf on TV virtually all over the world? It's and I had, you know, I'd been part of taking a couple other businesses global, and I said, guys, I won't lie to you and say this is going to be easy. You go through homesickness, you go through language issues, you go through cultural issues, but at the end of it, when you get to the other side, I remember I was at Brittany Lincecum's wedding a couple of off seasons ago, and I remember sitting at the reception and looking around the table and thinking, this is like the UN. I mean, there's players here from 20 different countries, and that's kind of what, if you jump forward 8 years, that's what we've become. It's hard to walk onto a practice range at an LPGA event and really know what players come from what country. They're all buddies with each other. They're all speak English. They're all having the same. They're all 25-year-old incredible overachieving athletes, but the benefit of where we are today is the whole world's watching, and they're watching all the time. Our sponsors come from all over the world now. Our fans come from all over the world, and as a result, we play all over the world. We're a U.S.-based company. This is our home. This is where our players move to. But we're committed to being a global sport, and now other sports are calling us, asking us, how'd you get there? So being a global sport is the dream of almost every commissioner. Some sports are just farther ahead than others.
Again, we're talking with Mike Wann, LPGA commissioner. And, yeah, I think that's evidenced by the fact that just looking at results from last year, only two Americans won tournaments on the tour last year. You've added some events this year, a couple in the United States, a couple not in the United States. And I think it proves that you are a global tour. And not only that, but one little interesting tidbit that I noted – when I went out to the PGA Tour app and was searching for scores, the LPGA is now listed on the PGA Tour app. So obviously making great strides all across the board.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. It's funny how cyclical sports can be. In 2014, I want to say it was about two-thirds of the way through the season, and I was at a media forum. We had a bunch of our media partners from all over the world in. I want to say it was in France. And they were complaining because there was just not enough international winners. The Americans were, and essentially they were complaining because the Americans were winning too much, and it was hurting their ratings throughout Asia. That was, you know, 2 years ago, you know, so this, at the end of this last year, a lot of people were asking me any of the questions. Do you think it's a problem that the Americans aren't winning enough? And I said, it's just strange. I mean, I chuckled because I said, it's strange. I feel like 18 months ago, I was answering questions overseas about how come the Americans are winning so much. So I said, you know, things come in waves, they come and go, but I'm not concerned at all about the pipeline of U.S. talent. I would say there's probably 60% of every time we tee up an event, there's Americans, and what I see coming off of our Symetra tour, and what I see coming out of NCAA, you know, makes me believe. And the best part is, I mean, if I could really draw up a perfect, you know, top 50 in the world, you know, I'd have 5 or 10 from America, but I probably wouldn't have more. I really want the best players in the world to come from all over the world. That creates global interest, that creates global TV sales, and that creates fans that are, you know, 10 to 15 times the size of the numbers we'd have if it was just a U.S. tour.
Yeah, I mean, two events coming up in Wisconsin, Indianapolis, New Zealand, and Scotland as well. So, again, for me, you guys are the global tour compared to all the other tours. And how does that influence things going forward? I mean, we see adjustments being made to Q schools. And how does that impact going forward? What do you see on the horizon? Do you see more partnerships with the PGA Tour in terms of events and things like that?
Yeah, so about 9 months ago, we Tim Fincham and I got together, and we created the PGA Tour LPGA Alliance, and we decided to work on four things over the next few years in a pretty concerted effort, where there's a lot of stuff going on in digital media and digital efforts between websites and you know, capturing videos and that kind of things for our fans that we were both doing separately, and we thought if we did them together, we'd be better. The first tee on LPGA Girls Golf have a lot of things in common. They're all trying to get young kids to experience golf on the tee box and experience life lessons early on. And we said, you know, the more we do together, the better. I mean, first tee wants to capture a bunch of women, and we're doing that. So we started working on that together. We're working on TV rights together. But the fourth, you know, element of that agreement was, let's figure out how to get the men and the women playing together, you know, at least 1, 2, 3 times a year because it's interesting to the fans, it's interesting to the media, and to be a perfect honest, we both found it's really interesting to our players. Both tour groups said it would be a fun event too. So we're hoping in the next year or two to announce an event or two where the LPGA and the PGA Tour are playing together. Formats, locations, sponsors to be determined. But as Tim said, it's got to start with a plan, and then we'll challenge ourselves over the next couple of years to figure out how we execute that plan. And as Tim is transitioning to Jay, I literally just talked to Jay last night for about an hour on the ride home. So we've just created the dialogue where we're working together. I appreciate you recognizing that the LPGA listed on their website. I mean, even within their telecast now, they're telling where the LPGA is playing that week, which creates value for our sponsors and value for our tour. So it's exciting to see. I've said this many times. I left the golf business in 1999 and was in the hockey business for 10 years. And when I came back to golf, the most overwhelming difference after being gone a decade was the collaboration between the top stakeholders of the game. I mean, I have a partnership with the PGA of America. I have a partnership with the USGA. I have a partnership with the PGA Tour. It's really cool, I think, for the sport to know that the top entities of the sport are really working together on a pretty regular basis. And the Olympics is a great example of that.
Yeah, the collaboration is incredible. And I'm curious if the economies of scale and some of those things that everybody can benefit from, does that far outweigh the risk of maybe getting saturation in a marketplace? Or do you see the audiences as being enough different that if you have events back-to-back at the same venue, you're going to be able to attract some crossover but a different set of fans?
Well, I think your vision when I probably said playing together was back-to-back, kind of like Pinehurst 2014. But our vision is actually not back-to-back. Our vision is same time, same place. So imagine if you're watching an event where, a threesome of men just teed off and walked down one and the next group up was a threesome of women. That would that doesn't cause saturation. That causes excitement. It's fans come one time and see both from a TV perspective. You're seeing both play in the same venue and the same pin placements, putting the same greens.
That's awesome.
We think would create a further level of excitement that the fans and the media haven't seen. And it'd be fun to see, Bubba hitting balls next to Lexi Thompson, talking about and just comparing the games. And we'd both learn from eavesdropping on that conversation.
Yeah, I'm sold. I love that. That's a great idea. That's the best so far. So I'm looking at the schedule, 35 events. The purses are up a record 67 and almost $500,000 in prize money. A third of the events have an increase in purses. Again, when you talk about being the envy of other commissioners, seeing increases in revenue, increase in sponsor dollars, increase in events, you've got to be the envy of all the commissioners. But I'm curious also, when you look at this year with the Solheim Cup coming here, how does that fit into the way you weigh the schedule and your focus and concentration for the year?
Well, the Solheim Cup is just quite simply the biggest female golf showcase that happens in our sport right now. So it happens every 4 years in America and every 2 years because we split with Europe. And Des Moines is going to be crazy. I mean, I can tell you now with almost still a year to go that Des Moines will be the biggest both fan and sponsor Solheim Cup in history. So it's already surpassing all other previous benchmarks. So, I mean, it's going to be crazy in the Des Moines Country Club. And so what we have to do is we have to look at a schedule that says, how do we, we're talking about 24 of the best players in the world are going to play on that. They may not play the week after. So let's try to build a schedule that kind of makes that doable. But that's the one event where we have to sit down with Golf Channel and NBC and a lot of others and say, hey, when do we put this at a chance where we can do the most in terms of coverage? Because the level of media interest coverage and just quite frankly hours of coverage is like nothing else we get. So it's the one we have to kind of set down and then build around. It's a great problem to have, but there's just nothing like the Solheim Cup in terms of excitement, mostly because I've said this to players many times, mostly because at the Solheim Cup, our players sort of look like we do on the weekend. They look nervous. They're playing in teams. It clearly matters. It's not about money. It's about pride. And all those things would describe my typical Sunday morning on the first tee.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I like anything that changes up the sameness, because there can be a sameness. I know we're in different cities playing different tracks and different weather conditions and different days. Just look at the Bahamas and the web.com tour and the curveball that got last week. But, there's a sameness to it. So I like match play. I like Solheim Cup. And this year's Lorena Ochoa Invitational is moving from November to May. When you guys sit around and you're talking about format for tournaments, is there anybody at the table saying, we need more match play, we need more tournaments that have a different format?
I think different is the right phrase. You know, we want to shake it up both for us and for the fans. I mean, we've done a few things over the years that people probably scratched their head at when they first heard, but turned out to be fine. We started the Founders Cup, where we originally played for no purse and put all the money to the future of the game, kind of like our founders did, raising money for the next generation of women. That was seemed strange at the time. We introduced a new tournament that plays every 2 years called the International Crown, and everything about the International Crown golf had never seen before. There was eight countries we're going to be playing in it, but rather than a selection committee or some other funky way to come up with it, we just simply said we're going to take the best four female golfers from every country, add their Rolex world rankings together, and that's your country score, and the best eight scoring countries every 2 years will get in. It's it's a four-day format where it's that's team, a combination of team and match play. Even the format over the 4 days had never been done before in golf. So I remember when I said to our team and we went to announce it, the media and everybody else is going to take shots at this, mostly because they're going to say, where has this been tested before? But let's be gutsy enough to say, hey, we're going to bring golf something it hasn't seen before. And now, you know, we're about to take that to Seoul, Korea in 2018, and we'll blow the roof off it there. But it's I think when you take risks, a lot of times you get the reward back. And I even think in the Olympics, one of the things we're looking at as an Olympic board right now is we loved what happened in Rio. We certainly don't want to eliminate stroke play because it's an important part of identifying who's the best golfer that puts the gold medal around their neck. But how do we take those 14 days and provide additional formats, additional podium opportunities, and additional things for the fans to see? The Olympics gives us the largest kind of casual fan base in golf history. So rather than just give them stroke play, which they can probably see the next week for both of our tours, let's look for other formats as well. So, yeah, I think I don't think that's just an LPGA thing. I think across the board, the idea of bringing new, fresh ideas is just good for the game.
Well, Mike, as always, we appreciate you hopping on with us. Good luck. Have a great 2017 season kicking off on January 26th.
All right, Mark and Mike, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot. That is Mike Wann, Commissioner of the LPGA.